Thank you. Yeah, so today I'd like to tell you about some ongoing work on symmetry-protected topological order in open quantum systems. The work is with Caroline de Groot, who's with me at the Max Planck Institute, and Norbert Schuch, who just started at the University of Vienna. It's very close to being done. We're writing it up right now, so I think you can expect to see it on the archive later this month. But we're far enough along that there's plenty for me to tell you about. So the idea is to think about topological phases in open systems. There's been lots of work, especially in the last 2 decades, on classifying and characterizing gapped phases of matter, so both topological orders and symmetry-protected topological phases. Usually, this is done in closed, isolated systems where one defines phases in terms of Hamiltonians or alternatively in terms of their ground states. But in realistic physical systems, there is some non-trivial coupling between the system and the environment. So it's a natural question to ask how phases are defined and what their classification is in this more general context. So there it's a little tricky because the whole language of Hamiltonians and pure states doesn't quite make sense. One needs to think about evolution of mixed states under a Limblot equation. So this question of how to think about topological phases in open systems has two components. One is look at the topological phases that we know to exist in closed systems and ask which of them survives coupling to the environment, and for which types of coupling to an environment do they survive? So are they robust against dissipation? And another harder question is, are there exotic non-equilibrium phases of matter that aren't at all related to pure state topological orders? So some of the first few steps toward answering these questions were taken in this paper by Cosser and Perez Garcia in 2018. They're mostly focused on defining a notion of phase in these open systems. So they do this in analogy with closed systems. So in a closed system, a gapped phase is an equivalence class of gapped Hamiltonians. Two Hamiltonians are in the same phase if there's a smooth path connecting them. Alternatively, this can be formulated in terms of the ground states of these gapped Hamiltonians. One speaks of low-depth circuits mapping ground states of one system to the ground states of another system in the same phase. So low depth can mean a lot of different things, but for example, if you take your gates to be constant width, then the depth needs to be at least polylog. It needs to be more than polylog depth if you want to map between phases. So Cosser and Perez Garcia define something very similar for these Limblotian systems. They say that they define a partial order on mixed states by asking whether there's a fast local Limblotian evolution from one mixed state to another. So fast is a generalization of low depth. It means the amount of time you need to evolve from one mixed state to approximately another scales sublinearly in the size of the system. Local means that the Limblotian is a sum of local of terms that are supported on finite size regions. And this defines a partial order rather than an equivalence relation because sometimes you can map from one mixed state to another, but there isn't a fast local Limblotian going the other way. But in particular, if you have a partial order, you get an equivalence relation by asking about two-way transformations.
Sorry, what does fast mean again?
So fast means that the amount of time you need to evolve, so the channel that takes you from rho to rho prime, is e to the TL, where T is sublinear in the size of the system. It should be in particular, it should be polylog in the size of the system, just like the depth of the circuit.
The time it takes depends on the strength of the Hamiltonian or Lyrian. I can always scale it. So what's the unit of time here?
Let's see. I see. Okay. There may be some normalization that I'm missing then.
I mean, presumably you want the local strength of the Hamiltonian to not scale with system size for that definition to make sense.
The length of the piece, the local pieces of the Lomblatian are held constant.
Okay.
Yeah. So the point of their paper is just to motivate this definition, not to answer the classification question. So they motivate it by showing that nice physical properties hold. So for example, if you evolve this way, then observables vary analytically rather than having discontinuities.
So Alex, why this doesn't give equivalence relation?
So if you have a partial order, you can ask which things are both greater than or equal to and less than or equal to, and that tells you which things are equal. So if there's a Lomblatian evolution from row to row prime and another Lomblatian evolution from row prime to row, then we say those mixed states lie in the same phase.
Or you say you can define equivalence relation.
So this is a way of defining a partial order, which in particular gives you an equivalence relation. Right?
But then there are cases where you can go from one to second, but the other way is not possible.
Right, right. So the idea is that you can destroy long-range entanglement, but not create it. So you can go from a topological order of high complexity in some sense to one of low complexity, but then you can't go back.
Can you use just the minus of the Hamiltonian to back the evolution?
So if you're evolving one way with the channel e to the TL, of course mathematically there's this thing e to the minus TL, but that will not be completely positive in general. So it's not a valid channel.
Oh.
Right.
So you want to use only Hamiltonian that is bounded from below.
It's not a Hamiltonian, right? It's a Lomblatian. It's different.
Right. There's no family of Hamiltonians here. Okay, so while they don't answer the general classification problem, they do discuss SPT phases, and they can be classified under this equivalence relation. It turns out that the classification is trivial. So in particular, what they do is define a fast local Lomblatian evolution that takes any 1D state to a product state. So it looks like this. It's a sum of single site terms, and on each term, there's a chance that the state is replaced by a product state. So this thing gets exponentially close to a product state on the full 1D system in a short amount of time. So you can use this to map any SPT phase to any other SPT phase with the following procedure. SPT phase omega 1 is in the same phase as omega 1, omega 2 inverse, omega 2. And then you can just annihilate the first two factors to a product state, and you're left with something in the phase of omega 2. So it would seem that everything is in the trivial phase, but you might say, wait a second, when we define SPT phases in closed systems, we care about the symmetry on the circuits. So maybe the way out of this is that this Lomblatian they defined is not symmetric, but it actually is. If you take this product state to be invariant under the symmetry UG, then the Lomblatian does commute with the symmetry. And this condition I'll call weak symmetry, alluding to what I'm about to tell you, that there's a stronger, more appropriate equivalence relation or symmetry condition on Lomblatians that preserves SPT phases. So the idea of this talk is to propose and then motivate a definition of SPT phases rather than giving a full classification. The idea behind, of course, we can define a phase any way we want. It's just an equivalent relation on states. But by motivate, I mean, I want to convince you that this definition of phase is physically meaningful. And that's because I want the phases, the orders it defines to have to do with the values that the non-local order parameters take. So the definition is this: two mixed states belong to the same SPT phase if they're related by a fast local Lombardian evolution satisfying a strong symmetry condition. So that means that U commutes with the system Hamiltonian H, and UG also commutes with each of the jump operators. So H and the jump operators Li are the terms in the Lindblomian that appear in this Lindblom equation.
So how is it possible to satisfy this and not, for the Lindblomian to be symmetric but not satisfy this condition? Would it be, for example, if the symmetry permutes the jump operators or something like that, or how does that work?
Right. So if the symmetry permutes the jump operators, then it will fail strong symmetry but satisfy weak symmetry.
Right.
Okay. So with this definition in mind, I want to state a result, which is not a full classification, it's just a limited result. So for a special class of mixed states, which I'll call SPT ordered mixed states, two states are in the same phase according to this equivalence relation, if and only if the SPT order parameters take the same values on them. And I'll introduce the SPT order parameters in a bit, but the ones I'm interested in this talk will be string order parameters. In the paper that will come out, we deal with a few equivalent formulations of SPT order parameters as well. So what are these special classes of states? They are mixed states that have the SPT order parameters take the same values that they would on a pure state. So this includes, for example, mixtures of pure SPT states that are all in the same phase. So in particular, this result implies that pure state SPTO is stable against dissipation if and only if the coupling to the environment is strongly symmetric.
Alex, so while ago I worked on something called the symmetry protected topological order at finite temperature, where we try to classify SPT phases at finite temperature by looking at like a circuit complexity to prepare the state from your classical ensemble and so on. And then that was a work with, I think, Alex Kubica and some robots. And we found that normal global symmetry SPT is not really stable at finite temperature under these kind of things. And is it something related to your classification, or is I feel it's somehow related?
So I think these results don't quite apply to that situation because thermal states typically aren't SPT ordered mixed states. So a thermal state will be a mixture of the different energy eigenstates. And typically not every eigenstate has the same SPT order as the ground state. So it won't have a valid, the string order parameters won't take the values on those.
Well, what we argued is we need a higher form symmetry and so to be stable at finite temperature, I guess. But anyway, I just want to.
Right.
Thanks.
So I don't think these results directly apply to that, but it would be interesting to ask how this what classification you get from this equivalence relation when you don't restrict to these special mixed states. Okay, so I'm going to shift from the language of Limblotians to the language of channels because it ends up being easier to work with. Whenever I talk about channels, these claims will hold for all channels, but one should have in mind Limblotian evolutions, which are of this form. So a channel, it's a trace-preserving, completely positive map. As you all know, they have Krauss representations, and the Krauss operators satisfy some completeness relation. So a key example to have in mind is reversible channels. These have a single Krauss operator, and it's unitary. So one can convert the weak symmetry condition on Limblotians to a weak symmetry condition on the channels that the Limblotian generates. And here it looks like this. It's just that the symmetry commutes with the channel at all times. Okay, so let's dig into that weak symmetry condition and try to diagnose what's wrong with it. So in terms of the Krauss operators, one can write the left-hand side of that weak symmetry condition as what's on the left, and the right-hand side is what's on the right. Now, each of these gives you a Krauss representation of the channel, and any two Krauss representations are unitarily related. Well, if the number of Krauss operators is different, it's an isometry relating them, but here it's the same, so it's a unitary. And unitaries can be diagonalized into phases. So the basis in which you diagonalize will depend on G. So I'm calling that new basis KG sub I. But in that basis, they commute up to these phases. And the problem is that different trajectories, so different Krauss operators, can give you different phases. And this is a sort of interference between the trajectories. So let's see what happens if we force all these phases to be the same. Well, now we get this condition down here, and this condition ends up being basis independent. You can transform the k's into a different basis and it still holds, which means we can drop the superscript g. And this is the strong symmetry condition on channels. For this talk, we can even throw out the invariant theta, because I think it's just a weak topological invariant. Basically, it's like a zero-dimensional SPT phase that lives on each site. And if you break translation symmetry or you block sites together, you can get rid of theta. So the strong symmetry condition is basically that the Krauss operators commute with the symmetry. Now I want to note that these are both generalizations of the unitary evolution being symmetric in a closed system. So for unitary channels, weak symmetry and strong symmetry agree because there's only one Krauss operator that you have to check commutation for. It's only for irreversible channels that these are two distinct conditions. Okay. Now, using the relation between the Krauss operator and the jump operators, we see that if you have a family of strongly symmetric channels, by the definition on the last page, they're generated by a strongly symmetric Limblotian according to the definition I gave you before. And I'll also note that this strong symmetry condition on Limblotians has appeared previously in these papers, and the context there was studying conservation laws in symmetric systems. Okay, so one thing to check is that this channel we had that destroyed SPT phases is not strongly symmetric. So if you take this channel and find its jump operators, they end up looking like this. And one can act on it with the symmetry on both sides and see that it doesn't commute. So this gives us hope that strong symmetry is sufficient because it at least rules out that one problematic example. So before arguing for the claim that order parameters behave well with this equivalence relation, I want to give several useful formulations of the symmetry condition. So one of these is in the Heisenberg picture. So since we want to study order parameters, this is a very useful perspective. Instead of acting on the state with the channel, we can act on the operators with the dual channel. It's the thing made out of the conjugate Krauss operators. Now the strong symmetry condition has a different formulation in terms of the Heisenberg picture. If the symmetry commutes with the Krauss operators, that's equivalent to the dual channel fixing the symmetry. So to see that in one direction, it's just a straightforward application. Just write it out and write out the channel in terms of the Krauss operators, pull you through, and you're left with you. The other direction requires a trickier argument. One takes the sum of these commutators, you get this expression in terms of the channel, and then you say that E dagger fixes UG and it goes to zero. Then since you have a sum of positive terms, each of those positive terms has to be zero. So you get that K commutes with UG. Now, another perspective on the condition is in terms of purifications. So a purification is a unitary defined on the Hilbert space tensored with an ancillary space, such that the Krauss operators can be obtained by just contracting an ancilla with one of the legs of the unitary. So diagrammatically, the relation between the Krauss operator and the unitary W is shown here on the left. We've just glued in the ancilla state A into one of the legs. And then diagrammatically, the channel looks like what's here on the right. So the channel is conjugating rho by K and K dagger. The line connecting K and K dagger is the index I, which is summed over in the tensor network. In terms of the purification, it looks like what's shown on the right. So it's you insert rho and then A, and then you conjugate that with the unitary channel W, and those agree. So I claim that if there exists a purification that's symmetric with respect to some UG tensor UGA, where UGA is just any action of the symmetry on the ancillary space, then the channel is weakly symmetric. Moreover, the channel is strongly symmetric if and only if one can take the symmetry action on the ancillary space to be trivial. So diagrammatically, the two conditions look like this picture at the bottom. So if you hit both legs with G and G dagger and it leaves the tensor W invariant, that's weak symmetry. Strong symmetry says you can just hit the physical legs, not the ancilla legs, and the tensor will be invariant. So in terms of, one can think of this ancilla space as an environment. So W then is the Hamiltonian evolution of the total system consisting of your system of interest in the environment. The Hamiltonian on the total system can be written as a sum of tensor product of terms. And the strong symmetry condition means that each of the individual components are symmetric. Instead of the sum as a whole being symmetric, each of the individual terms, HS sub I, is symmetric. Okay, so.
Can I just ask to make sure I understand? So like, let's say the symmetry is just U1, like charge conservation. So weak symmetry is like saying that, you know, the system couples to a bath and exchanges particles with the bath, you know, the particles of the things that carry charge. And then, and the total number of particles is conserved, but it exchanges with the bath. But strong symmetry is saying like there's no particle exchange with the bath. The number of the particles just stay in the system. Is that right?
Right, like particles can flow in and out, but the net flow is zero. Right. So there's a conservation law on the system itself.
Right.
Right. So these maybe provide some intuition already why this symmetry condition is an appropriate one for thinking about SPT phases. But I think definitely the connection between SPT order, which is characterized by some group co-cycle, and this sort of conservation law interpretation needs to be made more explicit. So to do that, I want to think about the non-local order parameters that detect SPT order. So there are several formulations of these. What I'll talk about today are string operators. And for the remainder of the talk, I want to restrict to the case where G is finite abelian. If G is not finite abelian, one can often still define string operators, but it's a little more technical. And also, they don't completely determine the phase invariant, the group cohomology class omega. But when G is finite abelian, string order is a complete invariant of the phase. So what are string operators? They're long strings of symmetry operators, UG, with end operators on the end. So in this picture, I only drew three UGs, but really there should be very many of them. Like it should be sufficiently long. I guess compared to things like the correlation length or the number of times you need to block the MPS representation of the state to make it injective, but the length of the string should be long. Now, these end operators are any operator that transforms in a single irreducible representation of G. So the left one transforms with some character chi alpha, the right one transforms the opposite way and chi alpha star. So yeah, it's our choice to pick the end operators, and the expectation values of string operators will depend on that choice. But ultimately, what we care to extract the SPT invariant is not the particular values of the string operator expectation values, but rather the pattern of zeros they have. And in that sense, the choice of the end operators ends up not mattering. So how we can extract the invariant is that expectation values on gapped peer states display a pattern of zeros. So I'll demonstrate this in the next slide, but the claim is that you take the expectation value of this, it's zero unless a condition is satisfied, which is essentially some relation between the class alpha and omega. Therefore, one can capture all of the ratios omega over omega, and I'll show later that that determines the whole phase. Okay, so how this works, I want to represent the states with matrix product states. I'll suppose that A is injective and in canonical form. If it's not, you can just block the system and then it'll break into a bunch of injective pieces and you can specialize to one of the pieces. But here, suppose it's injective and in canonical form. So what that means is that its transfer matrix has unique left fixed point, and this implies it has a unique right fixed point, which I'm drawing as lambda, the purple tensor. So that means if I take a long string of these transfer matrices, I can just write it as this, this projector type object. And then secondly, note that if the MPS state is invariant under a symmetry, then the tensor is symmetric. So there's some local condition on the tensor that encodes how the symmetry acts on the state. And this VG that appears on the virtual legs of the MPS encodes the cohomology class as a projective representation, as the co-cycle of the projective representation. Okay. So now let's evaluate the expectation value of the string operator. Just sandwich the string operator between the MPS and its dual, and now apply the various relations on the previous slide. So pull these UGs down to the virtual level using the symmetry. And then you can, since the string is very long, you can annihilate the center of this diagram. And what you end up with is that the expectation value is just these two bubbles on the right-hand side of the equation. So I'm gonna call these bubbles NG, and essentially the expectation value evaluates to the trace of NG and the N operator O alpha. So one can check how these transform by definition, O alpha transforms in the representation alpha, and NG, one can compute, transforms as omega over omega. So the trace of these will vanish unless they're transforming the same way. So in particular, we get this pattern of zeros. And if they transform the same way, generically, they won't be orthogonal. We could get very unlucky and pick the pick some end operator in this codimension one space of things orthogonal to NG. But for a generic choice of end operator, we won't get zero unless it's enforced by the pattern of zeros. Okay, so we can represent a pattern of zeros as an array where the columns are G and the rows are alpha. So for each G, there's a unique alpha. So some examples of this with Z2 cross Z2 symmetry, as you know, there's a trivial phase. The pattern looks like this. There's also a Haldane phase where the pattern looks like on the right. Now, from this pattern, one can reconstruct the invariant. So these ratios omega over omega determine the cohomology class. Basically, the argument is that the kernel of the map that maps from omega to the ratio is just co-boundaries. So suppose the ratio is one, then VG commutes with VH for all G and H. By Schur's lemma, VG is proportional to the identity. And then you have this equation here, which just tells you that omega is the co-boundary of this phase, this proportionality constant beta. Okay. So I've told you what string operators are and how you can detect the full SPT invariant omega from their expectation values. Now let's study what happens when we subject them to noise. So I want to start with the simplest example of noise, which is uncorrelated noise. So this is a channel that decomposes as a tensor product of local channels. And it's easy to see that the full channel is strongly symmetric precisely when these local pieces are. Now we check that the type G alpha of the string operator is preserved. So in the bulk, that's very easy to see. The dual channel just takes this symmetry element UG, and as we showed before, strong symmetry means it remains UG. For the end operators, one uses the facts about how the symmetry commutes through the Krauss operators to see that the end operator is transformed, but the resulting end operator transforms in the same representation alpha as the original end operator. Therefore, in total, the string operator has mapped to some other string operator in the same class. And conversely, if a channel preserves all string orders, string operators this way, it must be strongly symmetric. So this is a claim on the level of string operators. Well, what can we say about states? Well, in one direction, one can see that if the string operators are preserved, then so are their expectation values generically, as long as we're careful to choose end operators that aren't accidentally orthogonal to either NG or the channel acting on NG. But what about the converse? Given a state, which channels preserve the expectation of the string operator? You might think that it's possible for an ugly channel, one that doesn't preserve string operators, to still preserve the expectation values of string operators. So let's show that that can't happen. The claim is that a generic state with some pattern, for a generic state with some pattern, the semigroup of channels of uncorrelated noise generically preserves the pattern at all times, if and only if it's generated by a strongly symmetric Lombardian. So you may notice two things about this claim. One, I specialize to generic states. So these have some properties which are crucial to proving the converse. They have injective MPS and they have exactly G symmetry, no more. So there may be some exotic channels that are not strongly symmetric that just happen to work on very special states. But if we want this to work on every state in the phase, we need this, then strong symmetry is exactly what we need. And also crucially, we can't we can no longer speak just about arbitrary channels. We have to restrict to those that are part of a semigroup. Okay, so let's draw out the evolution of the string operator again. The expectation value on the left evolves into the expectation value on the right. Now, the thing on the right will vanish unless this transfer matrix has maximum eigenvalue 1. Remember, the string is long, so you're going to get that transfer matrix very many times. So its maximum eigenvalue needs to be 1, otherwise the expectation value will vanish. Now there's this result in MPS theory that for injective MPS, and again, we justified the injectivity assumption, eigenvalue being 1 implies that the insertion is a symmetry. So since G is the full symmetry group, and again, we justified that assumption, E dagger of UG is some U of sigma G. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be the same symmetry, but the dilemma that I'm citing says that it needs to be some symmetry, which I'm calling sigma G. And one can show that sigma obeys a group law, so it's an endomorphism on G. Okay, and here's where Limblotians come in. If the family of channels defines a continuous path in endomorphisms that goes from the trivial endomorphism at time 0 to sigma at time 1. For a finite abelian group, the only identity connected endomorphism is the trivial one. So sigma equals 1, so we get precisely the strong symmetry condition. So that shows our converse. Strong symmetry is precisely the condition on fast local Limblotians such that they preserve the string order parameter. Okay, so now...
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure. For the statements so far, which are applicable to a quantum channel and which are applicable to the Wiener? I'm asking because not all quantum channels are Markovian.
Right. So everything about how the string operators transformed holds for channels. So far, I've just talked about uncorrelated channels, but it holds for channels. And then just this last part, the last box on this slide, holds for those that belong to semigroups that are Markovian.
Okay. Yeah. So then suppose I consider a concrete example where I have an SPT defined by some Hamiltonian and I couple it to another system described by some other Hamiltonian, and the entire system is just described by some total Hamiltonian. I cannot assume the time evolution of my previous system is Markovian. And right. do you mean in this case, it's unclear whether the results here are applicable?
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. So the results about how the string operators transform are applicable, but the results about the actual pattern of zeros, the expectation values, are not.
Okay. Thank you.
So I think for when we're talking about phase equivalence, at least going by the Cosair-Perez-Garcia notion, it's defined with Markovian channels. Okay, so far I've just talked about a very special type of channel, which is uncorrelated noise. So now I want to generalize to everything that you can get with a fast local Limblotian evolution. So these things generate causal channels. So by causal, I mean they map operators, local operators, to local operators. So in particular, operators defined on some interval A to B to operators defined on some interval A minus K to B plus K. And K is like the range of this channel. Fastness means that the range K is small. So it's going to be small with respect to like the system size. So conjecturally, causal channels have a nice form. They're all convex combinations of channels that purify to causal unitaries. So in this talk, I'll be taking the conjecture for granted. If you don't believe the conjecture, then it's just left open whether there exist exotic causal channels that disobey what I prove. Now, why is this relevant? The causal unitaries that you get in the purification have been shown to have matrix product unitary representations. So there's a nice tensor network form of them that'll be useful in manipulating the string operators. Okay, so what's special about these matrix product unitaries? Any MPU satisfies a simplicity condition on blocks of a certain size, and that the maximum size you could possibly need is bounded by the bond dimension D of the MPU tensor. So the simplicity conditions say that if you have 2K copies of the MPO transfer matrix, it splits like this diagram on the left. The other simplicity condition says if you have these bubbles, at least of size K, you can pop them. Now, these two conditions imply causality, because if I sandwich an operator O between the MPU and its dual, one can apply the relations to get rid of the rest of the diagram, and one's left with just a bubble surrounding the operator O. So O has been turned by the channel into some O prime, which has been smeared out. It's now defined with greater support. Okay, so how do we use this to generalize beyond uncorrelated noise to general causal channels? Well, in the uncorrelated case, we had what's on the top left here. There's no connection between any of the sites. On each site, you're just conjugating your O by this unitary and sticking in ancillas. But we generalize this by adding these tensor legs between the different sites. So now you're conjugating this chain of operators by an MPU. In terms of the channel, so in terms of the Krauss operators of the channel, so that's where we've plugged in the ancilla into the MPU tensors. Just to get something with fewer legs, the generalization works like this. We go from something happening on each site individually to sandwiching our operators between MPOs. Okay, so what does strong symmetry mean for one of these MPO channels? Well, one can fold the MPU to get an MPS that's injective on the blocks of size K. Strong symmetry, remember, means that the MPS, or that the MPU as a whole, commutes with the symmetry. And the symmetry, again, is UG on the system legs and the identity on the ancilla legs. But in terms of the MPS, that means the MPS has this doubled symmetry. So when you have an MPS that's injective on blocks of size K and it's symmetric, one can realize that symmetry condition locally. So this G action fractionalizes on the virtual level, and one gets these things QG and QG dagger. So now just unfold this again and write it in terms of the Krauss operators, and one sees that the strong symmetry condition looks like this diagram at the bottom. You can pull UG through at the cost of some possibly projective action Q on the virtual level. Now, I actually lied to you at the beginning. Well, I did have an asterisk in my claim. And the asterisk is that when we're talking about causal channels, strong symmetry alone is not quite enough. We need to realize strong symmetry locally. So this means, in addition to what was on the previous slide, we require that Q is a linear representation. Now, before I show this works, let me motivate it. So closed system SPT phases, remember, are defined not by how they're related by symmetric circuits, but by how they're related by circuits of symmetric gates. So crucially, the gates themselves are symmetric. So if you have symmetric gates, this is the diagram at the bottom. This implies that when I act on some region of the circuit and push it through to the top, I'm left with just some G's on the left side and the right side. So, but conjugation by G is a linear thing, which means that Q is linear. So if I were to write this circuit as a matrix product unitary, it would have a Q that is linear. Okay, so now let's apply these to string operators. So the string operator starts like this at the top. It's sandwiched between these MPOs. And then using strong symmetry and the simplicity conditions, it becomes what's drawn at the bottom. So what does this mean? In the bulk, we still have these symmetry operators G. Here, there are just two of them, but really, again, there should be very many of them. The string should be long. The end operators now have been replaced by these fattened end operators. So here's where the local realization of the symmetry condition is. In order for the fattened things to transform in the correct way as alpha, it was important that Q was linear. Also, here's where the fastness of the evolution or the finite rangeness of the channel comes in. If we didn't impose this, then the light cones of the end operators would be so wide that they would destroy the bulk of the string. So we need fastness to keep the bulk of the string long, so the whole story about the pattern of the zero still works. Okay, so some results and conjectures. So I won't give many more proofs because they're kind of similar to the things I proved before, but it turns out the converse to this claim holds. So together we have that locally strongly symmetric causal channels are precisely the causal channels that preserve the types of string operators. So exactly what we had in the uncorrelated noise case. But now we go to talk not just about the operators, but their expectation values, and things get a little more complicated. You can ask, can we generalize our necessary and sufficient result about Limblotians from uncorrelated noise to causal noise? And we can show one way by the above. If the operators are preserved, then their expectation values generically are preserved. So local strong symmetry of the Limblotian is sufficient to preserve SPT invariant. But showing the other way around is hard. And we haven't been able to prove it. I suspect that it's true for MPO channels, that the local strong symmetry condition is necessary. It's just a matter of making this transfer matrix argument work in the general case. On the other hand, when you get into convex combinations, the necessary condition may be actually weaker than local strong symmetry. This is because you can take convex combinations of strongly symmetric things and junk that annihilates string operators, and the annihilated parts go away, and these channels work just as well as strongly symmetric things. So I'll just leave this as a conjecture. Okay. So with my remaining time, I want to take a little tangent that you may have from a point that you may have wondered about earlier in the talk. So remember when we were giving the transfer matrix argument, we found that the evolved pattern of zeros is non-vanishing as long as E dagger maps UG to some U sigma G, where sigma was an endomorphism of G. And we ended up setting sigma to one because we were only interested in channels that were part of semigroups. But let's say we're not. Let's say we're just interested in channels acting on SPT states. Then sigma can be any endomorphism. So let's take this condition seriously and rewrite it. The same, there's another way to state the condition in terms of the commutator of the symmetry with the Krauss operator. So now when you pull the symmetry through the Krauss operator, you get this twisted U. Okay, So a question I want to ask about these is, how do they act on SPT phases? And the answer is that they act within the space of SPT orders. So they don't pull you outside the space into exotic mixed states. They act within the space of SPT mixed states. And the way that they do it is by acting on the co-cycle by the pullback of sigma. So the pullback is defined here. It's omega with sigma inserted in the arguments. So let's talk a little bit about what these endomorphisms look like. So for 1+1 dimensions, the most interesting SPTs are those with group Zn cross Zn. So their endomorphisms are Zn valued 2x2 matrices. Group elements are just these vectors, two vectors with values in Zn, and the endomorphisms act by multiplication. Now the co-cycles representing these Zn by Zn phases are written here as omega k. And one can just use the definition of the pullback to compute the action of sigma on phases. And it ends up multiplying this label k of the cocycle by the determinant of the endomorphism sigma. So one particularly interesting case is that some phases omega k are preserved by non-trivial endomorphism actions. So if one has a determinant that satisfies this condition, even though it's a non-trivial endomorphism, it will fix the phase. Okay, so to understand the action of these things on patterns of zeros, of these channels on patterns of zeros, it's first important to understand how the endomorphisms themselves act on the patterns. I'll skip ahead a little bit, but basically, if sigma is invertible, G just gets transformed to sigma G, but the character gets transformed to, to the composition of the character with alpha inverse. If sigma is not invertible, it's a little more complicated, but one can work out a rule for constructing a new pattern of zeros from the old one. Then one studies string operators and sees how they evolve. So the channel again takes the bulk to UG to U sigma G. On the end operators, it transforms them to a sum of end operators where beta is something in the pre-image of alpha. And generically, none of these terms vanish. If alpha is, if sigma is an automorphism, then there's only going to be one term in the sum. And all this comes together in the pattern of zeros. One argues that the pattern of zeros evolved by the channel is precisely what we found before was the transformed pattern of zeros. Therefore, the action of these twisted channels on SPT phases was like this. It acts on omega by the pullback. So there's an interesting perspective on this that has to do with SPT complexity. So one can define this thing called a projective center of an SPT phase. So it's the space of G where basically the projective representation VG commutes with all of the VHs. In terms of the pattern, it's the space of non-zero entries in the top row. So when there's only one non-zero entry in the top row, we say the phase is maximally non-commuting. So in the Z2 cross Z2 example, the trivial phase would not be maximally commuting. K would be the entire group G, but in the Haldane phase, it's maximally commuting. And in terms of this, one can define something called the SPT complexity. And it's the larger K is, the smaller the complexity is. And this is sort of a measure of how complex the SPT phase is. Like one physical interpretation of this number is that if you square it, it's the number of symmetry protected edge modes. Okay, but what do these channels do on phases of various complexity? Well, one sees that they map within the space of SPT mixed states, but they can never increase the complexity. They either keep it the same or reduce it. So if I have something that's strongly symmetric, like this column on the left, well, it actually preserves each phase individually. If something's twisted by an automorphism, it maps things to phases of the same complexity. If I'm twisted by an endomorphism, it can reduce the complexity or sometimes keep it the same. And at the extreme other end of the spectrum, if my endomorphism is the constant one that maps everything to the trivial group element, it annihilates all SPT phases, brings them to the trivial phase. So why is this a unique, interesting phenomenon in open systems where one has irreversible channels? Well, it's because non-invertible endomorphisms are exclusive to irreversible channels. If you have just unitary evolution, then it's easy to see that sigma needs to be invertible. A related statement is that if your sigma is not invertible, you don't have a symmetric purification. So an example of a channel with non-invertible endomorphism, in particular endomorphism that takes everything to the identity element, is given here. You have these four Krauss operators, and no linear combination of these is unitary. So you don't have this relation at the top, which shows that sigma is invertible. And this channel is actually what the Kosar and Perez-Garcia-Limbladian tends to in the limit of infinite time. So we saw before that it was mapping everything to a product state, which is an SPT state, just one with trivial SPT order. And that reflects the fact that it is actually a twisted, strongly symmetric channel where the twist is the endomorphism that takes G to the identity element E. Okay, so it's getting to the end of my time, so I'll just highlight some key facts and wrap up. So some things we learned. One, symmetry protected topological order is destroyed by weakly symmetric couplings to the environment. We saw that in this example that Kosar and Perez-Garcia worked out. But then we asked, is there a stronger symmetry condition that doesn't have this issue? So we found two classes of results. One, if the channel is strongly symmetric, the string order, the string operator type is preserved and the converse holds. And this is proved for all causal channels. Secondly, if the Limbladian is strongly symmetric, then SPT order is preserved. And this is true for uncorrelated noise. Only one direction of this works for sure if we're talking about general causal channels. So that was the main result on open system phase classification. And then at the end, I just told you about these other channels, which even though they're not Limbladian evolutions, they're still interesting in that they map within this very special class of SPT mixed states, which have well-defined string order. And the way they do so is by reducing or keeping the same the complexity of states. So I've reached the end, and I'll stop here. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thank you, Alex. Are there questions?
Hi, Alex. I had a couple of questions. So just to clarify, are all non-trivial SPT mixed states in your formalism, You mentioned all of them are ensembles of pure SPT states?
So I'm not sure about that. Right, there may be some weird things that, I guess, like infinite mixtures of pure states. I don't know how those work. Yeah.
And in diagnosing this SPT order, does just the naive generalization of, you know, looking at the entanglement spectrum and looking for degeneracy there still work for the mixed states, or does that need to be modified for the mixed states?
Let's see. Okay, I'm not sure about, but like if you try to look at the action of the symmetry on the boundary, so I'm not sure if this is quite entanglement degeneracy, but if you try to get the projectivity of the symmetry action on a cut, you'll end up with VG and VG dual because you have a bra and a ket, and those will, so you won't see the projectivity in that. You need to somehow take a square root of that thing. So that makes me think that the same sort of thing would happen with entanglement degeneracy.
I see.
Yeah.
And also just to make sure, there are strongly symmetric channels which, given long enough time, will drive the non-trivial mixed states into a trivial mixed state, right?
Why do you say that? Let's see.
So, Tim, by long enough time, do you mean scaling with the system size?
Yeah. Like, you know, for the pure states, there are, you know, symmetric unitaries that, given enough depth, will.
Yeah, right.
And the same thing happens here, presumably, right?
That sounds like it should be true, yeah.
So then, like, have you thought about whether phase transitions between the non-trivial and trivial mixed states are they all pretty much in the same universality class as the pure transition, or are they different? Mm.
Yeah, I haven't thought about phase transitions.
Okay, thanks.
Can I ask a question? So you mentioned that the finite temperature states are not non-trivial SPT mixed states. So where, if we do want to see non-trivial SPT mixed states, you know, where should we be looking? Like, what is the context where they would arise?
I mean, if you take a system with a strongly symmetric coupling to an environment and it starts out in a pure state and then you evolve it in some short amount of time, then it will enter an SPT mixed state.
Right. And then also a related question. So for when we classify pure states, you know, we only classify for SPTs, we classify not all pure states, but, you know, a very special class of pure states, namely the ones that are ground states of gapped Hamiltonians. Right. So what is the condition that we should be placing on these mixed states for them to be legitimate states in this classification?
Right. So I tried to get out of that question by focusing just on these SPT ordered mixed states, which have the pattern of zeros of gapped pure states. So if you want to go outside of that, there's probably you probably have to phrase the analog of the gappedness condition on mixed states somehow, but I don't know what that would look like.
Can you remind me what the definition of SPT ordered mixed state is? It something that it's connected to a SPT pure state by a
Okay, I defined it as something that has the same pattern of zeros as a SPT pure state, but by the theorem it's equivalent to what you said.
I see
that it's connected to an SPT pure state.
Thanks.
Hi, Alex. I have a question. So for the usual, let's say, SPT enclosed system, I can talk about topological response, you know, putting some flux, I guess, some charge, that kind of thing. Does that aspect survive for this mixed states open system situation?
Right. So another order parameter you can look at is the charges of twisted sector states. So you take the state on a circle and you put a flux through it and then look at its charge. So yeah, so in the paper we study that as another order parameter, and they are preserved by strongly symmetric channels.
I see.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, so as a future direction, I think it'd be interesting to study other order parameters, and string order parameters, as far as I know, haven't really been generalized to higher dimensions or other phases.
Exactly.
But these sort of response type order parameters have been generalized.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Maybe a question related, and maybe you already mentioned, but I still want to make sure I know the answer. So what happens to the boundary?
Right, so the I guess if the SPT order is preserved, then the protected modes are preserved.
In the sense of what?
I guess, are you asking how are the modes even defined after evolution, or?
I think that's one aspect of the question.
Right, right. Yeah, okay, I think it is hard to define the edge mode degeneracy of a mixed state. I don't know how to do that.
I think in general, maybe for some Nilpotian evolution, one can imagine there's a steady state, and it's possible that the boundary also has some steady states, which and the steady state subspace somehow is guaranteed to be multidimensional. I don't know if that's the case. And I also don't know whether how general this is, but it may be one way to define it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that would. I'm interested if that is a way to define edge modes, and then also making the connection between what I talked about here and steady states might be tricky, since these are properties that hold at finite times.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So I have one question. So if you have a general d-dimensional SPT state, and if a strong symmetry condition is violated only at the boundary, say d minus one dimensional boundary, in that case, do you also expect there will be a fast way to trivialize the state?
So I have a symmetric SPT bulk with a symmetry breaking boundary condition.
Yeah, I mean, suppose the conservation, so symmetry, strong symmetry condition is violated only at the boundary.
Ah, okay.
A particle can come in and go only at the boundary.
I see. Just going by in one dimension, it seems like you wouldn't be able to trivialize a phase because the string order doesn't get near the boundaries of the system. It's long, but it's not as long as the system size.
I mean, when you have this causal structure, and it seems like the boundary can never really influence very far into the bulk, right? So then it seems like the boundary condition shouldn't matter.
Right. Right.
So does that mean you need time that is order of system size?
Seems like it, yeah.
Is it always scale linearly with the system size?
Or at least worse than polylog. But it feels like it would be linear because you want the light cone of the string operator to touch the boundary. Yeah.
But it may be slower than that in principle. It may take longer than that in principle.
Yeah, maybe. Right. Like some phases might be extra stable and it takes even longer. I don't know. I could be wrong, but in the closed systems case, I think linear depth circuits destroy all SPTs. Yeah.
Any further questions? Okay, if not, let's thank Alex, and we all look forward to meeting with you tomorrow for more in-depth discussion.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Alex.